UWP Snip, Thursday the 14th of November, Rabbi Jeremy Golker, Parshas Insights.
Shis Rabbi Larry, Shis Rabbi Dill, old Rebbe. My Rebbe, who I was privileged to know with some years ago, still looks very fresh and young. I know that the last time I was here, it wasn't so long ago, a few weeks ago, we spoke about that case of the poison sandwich, and I know there was discussion about having a part two, Mitzvah Hashem, another time, because I came across some pieces on this week's parsha, which is so beautiful that I would like to share them with you. The first piece is something I heard from Rabbi Lau, Yisrael Meir Lau. He came to London in 1996 as part of the Encounter Conference, and he davened at Dein Erentrosh Shul. He spoke there on Friday night, and I went to listen to him, and he said something which was majestic. So I would like just to share it with you. There is a pasuk in this week's parsha, which the Gemara in Chulin, Rashi speaks about it, but the Gemara in Chulin raises a problem with the pasuk. The pasuk says, we're familiar with it, Vayevose Yaakov levadoi, that Yaakov remains alone, Vayeovek ish imoi ad alus hashachar, he battles until dawn. And the pasuk continues, "Vayizrach loy hashemesh," and the sun shone for him. The obvious problem is, why does it say "Vayizrach loy hashemesh"? When the sun rose this morning, it didn't just shine; it didn't rise for any specific individual. It shines for the whole of mankind. What does the pasuk mean, "Vayizrach loy hashemesh"? "Vayizrach hashemesh." Says the Gemara in Chulin. Take a look at the next box, paragraph 1b. Omer Rebbe Akiva. Sha'alti Esrim Gamliel, Esrim Yeshua. I went to ask a question to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. The Itliz Shel Imum, in the meat market of Imum, a meat market which the Gemara often refers to. What were they doing there? Why were they going to buy meat? Shehochu Likach Behema Lamishta B'nosh Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua were going to the meat market to buy meat because Rabbi Gamliel was making a wedding. His son was getting married. And they wanted to buy meat for the chasna. So he went, so Rabbi Kiva asked them the following question. Ksiv, it says in the pasuk, Vayizrach lo yashemesh, and the sun shone for him. Vayishemesh lo yilevad zarcho. Did it solely shine for Yaakov Avinu? Vahale lo chala ilim zarcho. Surely it shines for the whole of mankind. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yitzchok, Shemesh habo ba'avuroi, the sun which set early for him, Zorcho ba'avuroi, rose early for him. What does that mean? So the Gemara continues and explains that 20 years earlier, Yaakov Avinu, at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, was running away from Esau. He comes to the Mokom HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to stop there and to daven there. And therefore, he made the sun set early. So imagine the sun was meant to set that day at 6 o'clock. And instead, he gets to the Mokom HaMikdash at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the sun set early. In those days, and even today, if you're living out of town, when it gets dark, you can't carry on walking. I remember going on walking tours in Hasanin as a student. You've got to be back before dark, otherwise you're in trouble. So Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh. So the Shemesh which set for Yaakov Avinu 20 years earlier, it was sort of outdone, it was cut short of 2 hours shining. 20 years later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu compensated the sun. Why? That instead of rising at 6 o'clock in the morning, on that famous night when he was fighting with the Malach, instead of rising at 6 in the morning, it rose at 4 o'clock in the morning. So it was compensated that 2 hours that it was sold short 20 years earlier. 20 years later, it was 20 years later. It was compensated. It was paid back, and it shone for an extra 2 hours. Fine, that's what the Gemara says. Now, without looking at the sheet, can anybody raise any questions with this Gemara? What difficulty do you have with this Gemara? Good, so what's the problem with that? No problem. Are there any shilas on the Gemara? Any questions? Again, what is the Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying that Rabbi Kiva went to the meat market of Imam, and he went to ask Rabbi Gamliel of Yeshua a question. What was the question? The question was, why did it say Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh?
And the answer is, for the Shemesh, which set 2 hours early, was compensated and rose.
Oh,
so what's the meat market? What's the significance of the fact that this dialogue took place in a meat market?
Why
this question? Why did he ask this question? Did he have any other questions? What's the significance of this question? What's the relevance of the chasna? They're at the meat market. Maybe they were going to buy meat for Shabbos. What's the relevance? The Gemara doesn't tell us things for nothing. This is all obviously very critical and relevant to the message that the Gemara is saying. In short, Rabbi Sadeh, I think there are 4 questions on this Gemara. I've written them out on the sheet. The first question is, what is the significance that the dialogue takes place in the meat market of Immum? Question number 2, what is the significance of the fact that Rav Gamliel and Yeshua were at the meat market to buy meat for the chasna, Rav Gamliel's son? Third of all, why couldn't Rabbi Akiva wait for Rav Gamliel and Yeshua to get back to the Beis HaMedrash? The Chara, they were busy. Rav Gamliel was meeting the caterer, he was meeting the butcher. Now you've got to ask the question? So why Dafka did he have to bother them now? And the final question is, who's Rabbi Yitzchak? You know, if you're going all the way in a time where they're probably very, very busy, you know, you'd expect they give an answer. But yet, they don't reply. There's no response in the Gemara. And the Rabbi Yeshua replied back, the Gemara, he's Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. So what's going on? So in short, Rabbi Lau wanted to say the following. Rabbi Akiva, many, many times in Shas, his personality shines through. You see it in different contexts. Famously, the Gemara Yevamos. The Gemara Yevamos tells us, I'm not going to go through the inside, there isn't time, but the Gemara Yevamos tells us that the 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, the 24,000 Talmidim, Rabbi Akiva passed away. What did Rabbi Akiva do? He got up, he dusted himself down, he started over. You see a certain resilience of Rabbi Akiva. You see, for example, the Gemara in Yuma says, Rabbi Akiva lived at the time just before the Churban, during the Churban, and after Churban by Sheni. And people came to him after Churban by Sheni, when it came to Yom Kippur time. And they said to Rabbi Akiva, this is Yom Kippur? We sit in a shul all day? We remember the Yom Kippur of old. We remember Yom Kippur with the Kohen Gadol, the Avodah Nebis Hamikdash, the soil, la zoza, the sol Hashem. We saw the chut change color. We saw the majesty of the day. This is a Yom Kippur. After the churban, they were dejected. Says Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara in Yuma Daf Pei Hei, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael lifnei mi atem matarem, mi mataresem, etc., etc. What was he saying? He's saying, yes, you're right. There's no Beis Hamikdash anymore. But don't forget that we've still got a Yom Kippur. Rabbi Akiva has got this ability to find the silver lining of every cloud. Oh, that's the next book. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Makkos, this is probably the most famous illustration. The famous Gemara at the end of Makkos, where Rabbi Akiva is walking, and his colleagues, together with his colleagues, and they see the shul, the fox, emerge from the Mokum HaMikdash. And they hear the noise of the Romans, the 2 stories at the end of Makkos. And they start crying, and he starts laughing. They say, why are you laughing? He says, why are you crying? We're crying because we see a shul, we saw a fox emerge from the Kodesh Kodashim, the place, the holiest place in the world, where the holiest person in Klal Yisrael would go in on the holiest day of the year. This was the place, the time, the person. And now we're just seeing it's like the fox is roaming there. So of course we're going to cry. So Rabbi Akiva says, for that reason I'm laughing. Because, as the Gemara says, now I've seen the fulfillment of the Pasuk, Shu'alim Hilchuvoi. So I'm confident that I'm going to see the fulfillment of the Pasuk, of Od Yeshu Zakenim, etc., etc. So again, you see that Rabbi Akiva has this remarkable ability to pick out the good in any bad situation. You see it just one more time. My father often says this at the Seder, that Rabbi Akiva, when the Maisa of Bnei Brak, what was the many of the Farshim that troubled? What were they all doing in Bnei Brak? The Rabbi Akiva in the story is the Talmud. He's not the Rebbe. The Talmud goes to the Rebbe's house. Why are they all going to the Talmud's house? So if I'm not mistaken, it's the Aruch HaShulchan in his Pirush on the Haggadah who says they went to Rabbi Akiva because they were not in the mood to celebrate Pesach. They were hiding in a cave. Why did the Talmud have to come in and say now is the time for Kriya Shema? They were hiding in a cave. What were they doing in a cave? Because they were hiding from the Romans. If you can imagine an analogy, that it's the concentration camps. It's Auschwitz. You're trying to celebrate Yom Tov in the camps. You're not really, you haven't, it's hard to experience the Simcha. And so where do they go to try and experience the camps? They go to Rabbi Akiva. He is the person who can lift them out of their dejection. So that is the midst of Rabbi Akiva. With this in mind, understanding who Rabbi Akiva was, we can now understand our Gemara and Chulin. What were our questions? What's the meat market? Why did he bother them then? He was making a chasna. Why didn't they give an answer? The answer is this, Rabbi Say. Rabbi Akiva wasn't going to ask a question. Rabbi Akiva was going to teach a message. The Gemara says that after the Churban, all the stringencies that we have in the 9 days, not eating meat, not drinking wine, they wanted to take on for the whole year. How can we eat meat now? There's no Beis HaMikdosh. How can we drink wine? And the Gemara says, listen, that's too much. It's Gezeira She'en Rev HaTzibah Yecholim Na'amud Bay. It's too much. We'll just do it for the 9 days. But that's what they were feeling. They weren't in the mood to eat meat, to drink wine, or to celebrate a chasna. So Rabbi Akiva goes up to them and said, this is not the way. Lo yizu haderech. I'll prove it to you. Vayizrach le'ashemesh. That there is a cheshbon in everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. That even something as minor and seemingly trivial as the amount of time which the sun shines, even that has an absolute cheshbon. That 20 years earlier, the sun had to set 2 hours early, and it was done out of shining for its full quota. So 20 years later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu recalibrates the system. Even something as trivial, there's a cheshbon. And that is the biggest source of nechama. If you know there's a method to anything which seems strange, that is a source of nechama. So Rabbi Akiva wasn't going to ask a question. He was going to be mechazik, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. He went along there to teach them, I know you're going to buy meat and you've got a heavy heart. But that's not the way. There's a cheshbon in the reasoning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever the cheshbon is, sometimes we know about it, sometimes we don't know about it. But there's a method to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing what he's doing. And therefore, that's why Rabbi Gamliel doesn't, and Rabbi Yeshua don't answer the question. Because they're not really being asked a question. They're being told some divrei chizuk. And therefore, he's quoting a member of Rabbi Yitzchok. He was the Baal Memra, so he went to say over, this shtikl Torah, Rabbi Yitzchok. Why the meat market? That's the whole point. Why couldn't he wait till they get back? Because that's the whole point. He wanted to mechazik them there and then. Okay. That is the first shtickle that I wanted to share. Why is it? Because Rabbi Akiva was saying over this shtickle Torah. He wasn't going to ask them a question. I want to be mechazik you. How am I going to be mechazik you? I'm going to tell you this vod Rabbi Yitzchak says. Okay. He happened to be there. He was keeping company with Rabbi Gamliel. Why? Because they often went together. They were going to talk in learning as they went. Why? I don't know. Why dafka those two? But you'll see, interestingly enough, the Gemara in Marcus. Yeah, Rabbi Shua was there. Yeah, so he was one of the people in the Gemara in Marcus. Yeah, okay. Fine. Just a final piece on that. I remember once hearing a remarkable story that, if you remember, there was a Professor Glatt. I'm sure many of you remember him. I remember his son, he now lives in America. But yeah, and I remember hearing a story about his father that I very much wanted to verify. And when I went to Menachem Oval, he was sitting shiva with his late father, punk then, as I walked in, he was about to tell this story. And it's a story that not only involves him, there was other people, I think, Rebbetz and Rabbi, the wife of the Rosh Yeshiva at the time, she was also involved in this, that in the beginning of the war, many Jews found themselves in Germany. They managed to escape to England, but they were German citizens. And as such, they were considered enemy aliens when they came to England. And because of that, they were deported. They weren't allowed to stay. They were considered enemies. So they were deported. And the British deported many people to Australia. And you can imagine, you finally found some safety, a haven in England, and then you're told you're actually considered an enemy alien, you've got to be deported. It was very hard to swallow. And then what's more, they were only allowed to take one suitcase on the boat. And Rebbetzin Rabbi was on this boat, and Dr. Glatz, who later came back and found that he was davening in Hen Adas. Anyway, he was on the boat, and feeling very, I mean, you can imagine, his whole world has been destroyed. He left as a single man, he left Germany, came to England, and now he's being deported to Australia. To make matters worse, when he, as they were approaching Australia, the British, the soldiers and the sailors on board, they, obviously there was a lot of friction between them and the German citizens. It was wartime. So some altercation happened. And what happened was, they made the German citizens take the one suitcase and throw it overboard. And you can imagine, that was the salt in this poor man's wounds. That's all he had, and he had to throw it overboard. Anyway, they get to Australia, and that's the end of the story, so far as he knew. Many years later, he somehow got back to England, he rebuilt his life, he started a family, and he became a very eminent doctor. He was an expert on alcoholism. And he was in a lecture somewhere in Europe, there was a seminar on alcoholism, and he was lecturing, and he was also in the audience. And during one of the lectures, he found himself in the audience. This is 30-odd years later, I think in the 70s. He's sitting in the audience, and he sat behind two German doctors who happened to be participants in the seminar. And he overheard their conversation. One of them said to the other, "Tell me, where were you in the war?" So Dr. Glatt was intrigued, so he listens forward a bit. And one of them said to the other, he was a sailor. He was in the U-boats, and he used to patrol around Australia. And they were talking, and said, "I'll tell you what, something interesting once happened. That we were once watching a British boat, coming to Australia, and it's an enemy boat, it was wartime, we wanted to destroy it. But all of a sudden, as we were about to destroy it, some suitcases came overboard. So we sent some divers out, we retrieved the cases, we opened them up, and then we realized there's German literature here, there must be German citizens on board. And they did that. They waited for the ship to get to Australia. All the passengers disembarked, and then on the way back, they destroyed the boat. So the very thing which he thought was the salt in the wound actually saved his life. That's the cheshbon HaKadosh. Now, he happened to be in this conference, so he found out this little bit of cheshbon, this cheshbon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we find out, sometimes we don't find out. The point is, Rabbi Kiva saying that the biggest nechama a person can have is knowing that there is a cheshbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And that's why it says, Vayizrach Loi HaShemesh, to mark this point. But even something as trivial as the setting of the sun was part of the Cheshbon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, let's turn over the page. There's time, I think, just for number two. This I saw in the writings and in the Divrei Torah of Rabbi Lev, a very beautiful idea. Earlier in the parasha, second pasuk, Yaakov Avinu sends Malachim to send a message to Esau, just before their fateful encounter. He says, "In Lavan Garti, I've been living with Lavan for the last 20 years. So Rashi famously says, what does it mean? Says Rashi, the top box, "Kaloma im Lavan Harosha Garti, I lived there, the Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti, and I kept all 613 mitzvahs. Veleilomadati mimaisim haron, mimaisov haron, and I didn't learn from his bad ways, his evil ways." So many of the Mefarshim are troubled by those last few words in Rashi. If you keep 613 mitzvahs, then isn't it obvious that no lamadat in maisim haroim? Isn't it obvious you didn't learn from his bad ways? You're in an environment which is so antithetical to everything Yaakov stood for, and he kept 613 of the mitzvahs, so of course he didn't learn from his bad ways. Many of the Mefarshim are troubled. What does it mean? V'lo lamadat in maisim haroim. So Rabbi Lev says the following, this is his mahalach. Imagine if you're standing on one clear night and you're looking out to the sky. Imagine that there was a big sphere, a big ball, which is being placed around planet Earth. And you can't see the sky, you can't see the into space. But someone were to come along and cut 613 windows in this sphere, in this big globe which is surrounding Earth. So you can now see through 613 windows into space. That really is what a mitzvah is. A mitzvah is a window, is a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu by putting on tefillin, by keeping Shabbos, by eating kosher, whatever, even the Losar says as well. They're just ways to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The difficulty is this. A person has to understand that is why I'm doing a mitzvah. The Nefesh HaChaim says that the key is mitzvahs of limud Torah. So before a person sits and learns Torah, he should articulate, I'm learning Torah to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear your Torah. That it's a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the trouble is that we sometimes lose sight of this bigger picture. The way to better than words is the following story, which I think brings out this point very, very clearly. It's quite a well-known story with Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovitz, the famous Torah pioneer of the 20th century. So he was once traveling, I presume to collect funds for the myriad of institutions which he founded, and he found himself in a far-off place, and he was there for Shabbos, and he needed a meal, so he got in touch, he remembered that a former student of his happened to live there, so he got in touch with him, he said, can I eat with you Friday night? And the Talmud, of course, was delighted, and he said, with pleasure. And they made up, they're going to daven together in the shul, and then they're going to come home and they'll eat together on Friday nights. This man was now married with a young family. Erev Shabbos, this young man, the host, the former Talmud, his home looks like, I'm sure, many homes, Erev Shabbos. Now, before Shabbos, it was mayhem. The kids weren't ready for Shabbos yet. The wife was exhausted. She hadn't slept the night before. The kids were up. It was mayhem in the home. And as he left 15 minutes before Shabbos to go to shul, the house wasn't any better. The house hadn't been cleared up. The table hadn't been laid. The kids hadn't been bathed properly yet. It was still crazy. And the mother was just totally exhausted. So before she was able to clear up and to set the table for Shabbos, she decides to do something very dangerous. She said, I need to sit down on the settee for 10 minutes. Just to close my eyes, a power nap. Just so I can have the koyach again so that I can now set the table. The kids are an hour and a half later. She wakes up, there's a knock on the door, and she gets the shock of her life to see her husband, Rav Shraga Feivel. Now, if you thought the house, quarter of an hour before Shabbos, looked unruly, now, a nuclear explosion. Yeah, the kids were loose for an hour and a half. They have served themselves a bit of supper. Every game they threw on the floor. Not terrible, disaster. Now, the guy comes in, and his blood is boiling. How can you do this to me? My Rosh Hashiva. I mean, I'm trying to put on a good show, and this is the house I come back to. And he doesn't say anything. You can see the body language is not good. And as he comes in and stumbles over the kids' shoes and clothes and school bags, he's looking at his wife, and he's agitated. The kids said they take 20 minutes to clear up. He's apologizing profusely to his Rosh Hashiva. And then they're standing 20 minutes later. Finally, he's ready to make Kiddush. And the straw that breaks the camel's back is that he notices that the challah dekel is not on the challahs. That she hasn't put the challah dekel on the challahs. And he just can't contain himself any longer. And he shouts at his wife. He starts screaming at her, don't you know we've got to cover the challahs? We do this every week, what's going on? I came in 20 minutes ago, and he just lets loose. And Shinebuch is so humiliated. And Rav Shraga Feivel afterwards noted, what an ironic situation. What is the point of the challah dekel? The challah dekel, of course, the reason why we cover the challahs, but one of them is that we shouldn't be mevayesh the challahs. Now, Rabbi Yisrael, says Rabbi Lev, has anyone seen a challah get embarrassed? Has anyone seen a challah at the meal, if let's say the challah dekel wasn't, storm off, run up to the room and close their door? Yeah? If you do, my wife is a counselor. I can't pretend. Yeah. If Rabbi Yisrael, what is it? It's meant to teach us a lesson. It's meant to teach us not to advise anyone else. And the very thing which he was embarrassing his wife about was this. Irony of ironies. But what's the deeper message? The deeper message is that a person doesn't see the whole picture. If a person sees individual mitzvahs as just, this is what I've got to do, this is just how I get through my day, I brush my teeth in the morning, then I put on tefillin, then they're just doing things by rote. The point of a mitzvah is to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The point, therefore, of Rashi is this. Tariag mitzvah shamarti. Not only did I keep 613 mitzvahs, but lo lamadati mimaisim haroim. I didn't learn from his evil ways. I can still understand the bigger picture. I can connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu through those 613 mitzvahs. He tells a story about that, which also brings this point home very clearly. He was a young Rav in Miami. He was in his 20s still. And he gets a call from a lady, an old lady in the community, as a few days before Yom Kippur. And the lady says, Rabbi, I've got a problem. My husband, he's in his late 80s now, and the doctors have told him that this Yom Kippur he has to eat. So what's the problem? The problem is he's refusing to eat. He said he's fasted every Yom Kippur 75 years. He's not going to stop now. He's going to fast on Yom Kippur. So by left, he found out the doctor's way. He checked it. He verified the man has to eat. No question. So he goes around to his house and he says, "Listen, what is why? I mean, your wife tells me that you're not going to eat on Yom Kippur. The doctor told you to eat. What is the problem?" So he said, "Rabbi, I'm 3 times your age." He said, "I've been fasting for 75 years. No one is going to tell me otherwise." So Rav Lev said, "Look, I can't force you. But one thing I can do is that, please God, you'll come back to shul, but I'm not going to be able to give you an aliyah." "Why can't you give me an aliyah?" "Because I don't give aliyahs in my shul to idol worshippers." "Idol worshippers? Why am I an idol worshipper?" He said, "Look, I don't know why you don't want to eat on Yom Kippur. Maybe you're following an idol called Zeus. Maybe you're following an idol called Baal. Maybe you're following an idol called Yom Kippur. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his Shulchan Aruch says you have to eat. So I don't know what religion you're following or which idol you're following, but you're an idol worshipper, and I'm not having idol worshippers in my shul. They're not getting an aliyah." That's what he said. Now, of course we can empathize with this man. It's very hard. All the years you fast on Yom Kippur, now you've got to eat. Of course it's very difficult. But it's an illustration of someone who is not seeing the bigger picture. I'm fasting on Yom Kippur because that is the Ratzon Hashem. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. So I'll eat on Yom Kippur if that's the Ratzon Hashem. The Shulchan Aruch is just an expression of the Ratzon Hashem. That's all. That's Pshat in the Pasuk, V'loi lomadati mimaisim haroi. Okay, there's time very briefly for number 3. It's a beautiful ha'ara of the Sfasemes. The Sfasemes says an obvious observation on this Pasuk. The Pasuk, when Yaakov and the Malach of Esau are fighting, by Yeshua, Malach in the bottom box, and Yaakov, Lema, Bono, Lechit, Lechit, Begam, Holich, Holich, Cross, etc., etc. By Yom Yaakov, and before Yaakov encounters his brother, he says, Elokei Avi Avraham, Ve'elokei Avi Yitzchok, Hashem, Heome, Elai, Shuv, Laretz, Gomatz, etc., etc. He's doubling HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me give you a moshel. You have a boxing match, and you have the red corner, and you have the blue corner. And the fellow in the blue corner, as he approaches the middle of the ring in the beginning of round one, he offers a silent prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, "Ribbono Shel Olam, in the zuchus of my father, and in the zuchus of my zeda, let me clobber this fellow." That's all well and good if this fellow is a stranger. But if this fellow is your brother, who shares the same father, and the same zeda, then how can you daven in the zuchus of Yitzchak and the zuchus of Avram? He was battling against Esau. They share the same father and the same zeda. Says the Sfasemes, the point is this: you can only draw on zuchus others if you follow in the way of your zedas. Once you have abandoned the ways of your zedas, then you can no longer draw on zuchus others. Esau, it was irrelevant. He had abandoned the ways of Yitzchak and of Avram, so therefore it was inappropriate for him to daven, and it was fine, therefore, for Yaakov to therefore draw on the zuchus of Yitzchak and Avraham as before he encountered his brother. We'll leave it there.
What's the story of
Sarah? Yeah, 2 minutes. Yeah. Oh, good. Okay, say that. Okay, I've been asked just to say the story. I can see the... Okay, very briefly. This is a story I heard many years ago. I was at a Leviah for Mr. Stevie Ikovitz's father, who was a survivor in the camps, and there was a fellow there, Mendy Teitelbaum, who I'm sure you know, he's moved to Boreham Wood now, and his father, Yitzhak Teitelbaum, well known to everybody, was also had a horrible story during the war, and suffered terribly. And he was in the camps with his brother, I think 5 years, and he was with his brother, his parents were wiped out, the whole family wiped out, but him and his brother, Meir, went through the camps together for 5 years, but the last few weeks they were separated, and they lost track of each other. It turned, and after the war, the camp was liberated. Yitzchak Teitelbaum survived, and he was of course chalishing to know what happened to his brother. And it took many months. I think it took up to 2 years until he found out that the brother had actually made his way to Argentina. So travel was very difficult. Then he eventually got to Argentina. And he found that his brother now had lost all connection to Torah Mitzvah and had married a Jewish lady, but not a frum lady. And he was devastated. But Rabbi Yitzchak Teitelbaum was a big pekeach. And he very much wanted, he was there for a few weeks, and he very much wanted to try and turn things around. So he did the following. He obviously found the right moment, and as he was sitting with his brother, and he said, at the right time, he said, you know, I think now is the time to make a matseva for mummy and daddy. So his brother, Meir Tagan, looked at him, what are you talking about? They were killed in the gas chambers in Auschwitz. A matseva for mummy and daddy? What are you talking about? He takes out a pair of tefillin, and he says, the tefillin shel yad, this will be the matseva for daddy. And the tefillin shel rosh, this will be the matseva for mummy. And it penetrated him, those words, that the brother Meir flew into a frenzy. And he decided there and then he's going to become frum. He started screaming and shouting, and he goes, I'm going to be frum. And he went into the kitchen, he threw all the plates, and he threw it on the floor, and he smashed all the crockery. And he said to his wife, you're going to cut your hair, we're going to keep kosher. And from that moment on, he was, the point is that he had tremendous chusavas. And you can only draw on the chusavas if you utilize the chusavas.